Welcome to this week's episode of Down Home Radio. Be sure to check out our website at downhomeradioshow.com. Well, today on Down Home Radio, we have a special focus on Bob Dylan.
Yeah, well, hello, Eli. Yeah, you know, his career, which is very, very long by this time, really is not easy to dissect. And so, what do you think of the idea we start with the early Bob Dylan, when he was quite political and very much concerned with social concerns?
Right.
And then we'll do subsequent programs in which we will talk about his conversion to Orthodox Judaism and then to Christianity,
right,
and then back to Judaism, and of course an awful lot of stuff that had to do with the morality, you know, and introspection. But the early Dylan, the one that I knew, of course, was really concerned with social questions.
Sure. So we're going to focus today on the early political songs of Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
What shall we start with?
Well, as a matter of fact, at that time, a little bit later on, I was writing my own book about Woody Guthrie. And of course, Woody is one of the most important reasons why Bob came from Minnesota to see him, because he really adored him.
Sure.
And if there was one person that he has remained loyal to his entire life, it has been to Woody. Song to Woody. I asked for permission to reproduce that song with which I wanted to end my book. It took me 6 months before I received permission.
All right, that's A Mighty Hard Road, the biography you wrote of Woody, yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we hear that right now?
I'm out here 1,000 miles from my home, walking a road other men have gone down. I'm seeing a world of people and things. Hear paupers and peasants and princes and kings. Hey, hey, Woody Guthrie, I wrote you a song about a funny old world that's a-coming along. Seems sick and it's hungry, it's tired and it's torn. It looks like it's a-dying and it's hardly been born. Hey, Woody Guthrie, but I know that you know all the things that I'm a-saying and a-many times more. I'm a-singing you this song, but I can't sing enough, 'cause there's not many men who've done the things that you've done. Here's to Cisco and Sonny and Leadbelly too, and to all the good people that traveled with you. Here's to the hearts and the hands of the men that come with the dust and are gone with the wind. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I could leave today. Somewhere down the road someday, the very last thing that I'd want to do is to say I've been hitting some hard traveling too.
What was it about Guthrie that attracted Bob, you think?
Well, I think that Bob recognized the poetry of what he had to say. He was impressed by the fact that he could say the most important things in the world in just a few words. In other words, he didn't need a book to tell you exactly how he felt about the world. And of course, there's no question about the importance of the words at that particular time in the 1930s. Woody never sang about trivial things, only about what he really figured were the most important things for the American people. Would you like to hear the way I felt about Woody when I first saw him on a broadcast? He was on one of my first programs at WNYC in 1940. I didn't know who he was, had no idea who he was, except that I heard whispers about his name.
Yeah.
And there he was in the studio, and I hadn't arranged the broadcast, but it was a broadcast about the miners, who were having, of course, a terrific struggle, you know, forming a union at that time. And it was Aunt Molly Jackson was not there, but her half-brother, Jim Garland, and half-sister, Sarah Ogan, were in that broadcast. And there was this young man. Somebody came over to me, tapped me on the shoulder, and said, "You see that wiry young man over there? He's Woody Guthrie." "Oh," I said, "I think I've been hearing about him. He's from the Dust Bowl, right? Newly arrived from California." I went up to him, or at least that's my recollection, and I said, "Mr. Guthrie, I know that you are a songwriter. Would you mind singing for us before the broadcast begins?" And his very polite voice, he said to me, "I don't mind if I do." He swung the guitar, which had been placed at his back, to playing position, the one that had the sign, "This machine kills fascists," drew a chair into the middle of his studio and began to strum. Everybody in the studio just simply found places, sat down on the perimeter of the studio, and Woody began to sing. I can tell you, that long song was received in utter silence. We were mesmerized. And I think we were mesmerized by the sincerity, the simple passion that was in the way he sang it. I'm quite sure that the song was Tom Joad.
So it was for you and the other people at the WNYC studio that day in 1940, probably, yeah. And maybe for Bob Dylan when he first heard Woody's recordings in Minnesota, yes, in the late 50s or early 60s. Yes. It was the it was the charisma, yeah. And what was the word we were using before? The conviction, yes.
Yes, a conviction of something that was morally right for the country at that time when we were, of course, living through the worst depression that we've ever seen.
Sure.
So, just let me tell you this. When the broadcast was over, the telephones in the station, Jeffsu, rang and rang and rang, people calling to tell us how impressed they had been. But Paul Kresh, who had written the script, tells me that he left with all the performers, and they walked down Park Row in New York City, Woody playing his guitar and singing as he went down the street, and people just lining up behind him, walking with him.
Oh, God, what an image.
So, really, Woody became, I would say, pretty much idolized, but only by the left, that's all. He was pretty much ignored by everybody else. I mean, the pop field, you know, radio at that time, after all, there was no television yet, the movies, ignored Woody completely. But there was the growing but small army of people who really had taken his measure and found that, as I felt that day when I heard him for the first time, that he was, even though he was speaking about people that I didn't know existed, I felt that he was talking about us right here in the city of New York. A number of years ago, I was in Mexico, and I was delivering a series of talks all on our old music from the United States, acquainting the Mexicans with our own writers, our own songwriters, as well as several programs, of course, about Latin America, where, after all, I've done research for the past 60 years. And I was in the city of Toluca, about an hour and a half away from Mexico City, and addressing an audience of young people in the museum there. So I talked about Guthrie, they didn't know anything about Lead Belly, about Pete Seeger, who, again, they didn't know anything about. But the moment that I mentioned Bob Dylan's name, everybody became alert, moved forward in their seats. I played Blowing in the Wind, and here it was. All of these Spanish speakers knew every single word in English. So why don't we hear that next?
Okay.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Well, Eli, let's take a real jump. I don't want to talk about the 30s anymore, or the 40s, but the 60s. Because that's really his time. Now, that was an incredible time, and I remember that with great clarity, because it was the time of three very, very important things that were happening.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, it was the fight against the Vietnam War. 2, civil rights in the South, and 3, feminism, all came together. It was also a time in which drugs became a most important part of young life, and open sex.
Yeah, it was the first psychedelic era in a way, yeah.
Yeah.
And before sexually transmitted diseases were a huge problem, yeah.
So it was all that mixture. And I know some people say, well, you know, what did the rampant use of drugs have to do with the fight against the Vietnam War or the civil rights struggle? Well, I just feel that the whole era was kind of a repudiation of the previous 50s, when you had this terrible conformity. That, of course, the 60s were the time when the bubble burst and everybody just went berserk.
Sounds good to me.
It does sound very good in our time. We don't have that anymore. Anyway, so one, of course, the most important issues of the time was the Vietnam War and the protests against it. And I'm sure that the reason that we had such large-scale demonstrations where all the universities, you know, were involved, in which, you know, myself at City College during that time, right here in the city, I mean, we were faced with daily demonstrations, with sit-ins, with all kinds of protests, you know, going on, because there was the draft. Today we don't have the draft, and so young people are just sitting it out. But it was very important. And I think one of the most important songs of that time was Bob Dylan's own song.
Yeah, Masters of War, which we're going to hear right now.
Yeah.
I'm your masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs. You that hide behind walls. You that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. For threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but you talk out of turn. You might say that I'm young, you might say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know, I'm younger than you, that even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed, and I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
It's pretty dramatic language, you know. Right? Yeah, I think the interesting thing is that even here, when he's talking about anti-war, he's also very much concerned with people's souls. And he said, let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think that you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
Well, and he's talking about the military-industrial complex there, too. He's getting that in there.
Yes.
In straightforward language. Well, continuing, I guess, in the nuclear holocaust theme, let's hear A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall next.
Yeah. I really find it one of the most incredible songs I've ever heard.
I think so, too. I come back to that one. It really... Yeah.
The devastation which he pictures if we don't do something about our planet is really...
It's pretty complete.
Absolutely, yeah. Unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a couple of lines. He said, I walk to the depths of the deepest black forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, where the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly, where souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it and reflect it from the mountains so that all souls can see it. Then I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, and I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard rains are gonna fall. And those are the words of a really great popular poet, Bob Dylan.
I mean, it's, you know, in a sort of an obvious sense, he's talking about war and he's talking about environmental concerns. But also, Dylan has a special power to make things rather universal and non-specific. So that song also has that quality of just stating that something very bad is going to happen.
Yes.
You know, something devastating.
But the way that he sees, you know,
and it's visionary, yeah.
Yes, a vision of what can happen to humanity in general. He does, as you say, he doesn't specify, but there it is, it could happen to all of us. So here it is, A Hard Rain's are gonna fall.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of 12 dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one? I saw a newborn baby with wild wolves all around it. I saw a highway of diamonds with nobody on it. I saw a black branch with blood that kept dripping. I saw a room full of men with their hammers a-bleeding. I saw a white ladder all covered with water. I saw 10,000 talkers whose tongues were all broken. I saw guns and sharp swords in the hands of young children. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard. And it's a hard rain's are gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were ablazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing. I heard the song of a poet who died in the gutter. I heard the sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain are gonna fall. Oh, what did you meet, my blue-eyed son? And who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside a dead pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young girl, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall. Oh, And what'll you do now, my blue-eyed son? And what'll you do now, my darling young one? I'm a-going back out for the rain starts a-falling. I'll walk to the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley meets the damp, dirty prison, and the executioner's face is always well hidden, where hunger is ugly, where the souls are forgotten, where black is the color, where none is the number. And I'll tell it and speak it and think it and breathe it, and reflect from the mountains so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my song well before I start singing. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, and it's a hard, it's a hard rains are gonna fall.
Well, of course, all these songs that we've been playing are from Dylan's early acoustic, folk, protest, songwriter era. And of course, Dylan is known for never staying put, really. He's always evolving and finding new ways to be himself, right? And people always talk about when he went electric. What was your experience of that transition that Dylan made and the reaction that occurred?
Well, I reacted very strongly to an article that appeared in Sing Out, you know, the folk song magazine. The editor was Irwin Silber, and Irwin Silber wrote an attack on Dylan, because Dylan had been an adored, you know, partisan of the protest song.
Sure.
And then he began to change, and he became more introspective, you know, as we've noticed as he went along in his life. But I disagreed completely when it was Tom Paxson, another songwriter, who called it not folk rock, but folk rot. And that really got me sore. And I wrote my own defense of Dylan at that time. And there was, of course, a tremendous amount of controversy, because in 1965, at the folk festival in Newport, he went electric, as if that was, of course, a betrayal. Goodness knows, I mean, the folk community, you know, sticking to acoustic guitar and banjo and things like that, and anybody who betrayed that was, of course, a traitor to the cause. What? And, of course, Dylan at that time appeared with a Paul Butterfield blues band, a wonderful group, you know, of musicians, terrific, yeah? And from then on, he was really looked down upon by the folk music circle, I'd say, you know. It had become quite cultish in its preservation of the past. It only decided that it would look at things that it liked, and if you went against the traditional things, then of course you were some kind of a traitor to the cause. Well, I never considered music a cause, only a way of expressing oneself. So anyway, the controversy has become ridiculous, but it did occupy the attention of a lot of people, you know, at that particular time.
For a long time. Oh, yeah, that just doesn't seem to go away.
Yeah. Well, yes, they keep on hoping that he's going to return and write protest songs again. And actually miss the importance of Bob as a poet. You know, Bob is an very, very ancient tradition. The tradition that really begins, let's say, or at least flowers, during the Middle Ages in Europe, and that was the troubadour tradition, in which musician-poet was one. Of course, at that time, they wrote about love. But of course, later on, it was expanded. And of course, it's still an important way of expressing oneself in, for instance, in Latin America. But the prime example, I think, of the poet-musician is really Bob Dylan in our own country.
So Guthrie does not fit that criteria?
No, it's another trend. Listen, we have a lot of trends. There isn't only one way of looking at music.
I wanted to ask you, we were talking before about how, of all the changes that Dylan has gone through and this and that, he always remained true to Guthrie.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you, if he didn't remain true to him in a political sense or in a musical stylistic sense, in what way do you think Bob has remained true to Woody Guthrie?
Well, in the sense that he has never really, really lost his social responsibilities. You know, Bob has never been bought by anybody. He walked off the Ed Sullivan show because they cut out his song, and he has resisted. He's become very, very wealthy. He travels around the world giving concerts and continues to release more material all the time, but he's never sold out.
Right, or he's never compromised himself, right?
Never compromised. It's always been Bob Dylan, whoever he is, and whatever is on his mind, and that's what he tells you. But you can't buy him. And too many times what happens to popular artists is that when suddenly they become famous and earn a lot of money, they feel as if they have to be conciliatory to commercial or other interests.
Right, they go from being like total outsiders to being total insiders.
Yeah.
And then they're so happy to be insiders that they're just sell out, right?
Yes.
Something like that.
But Bob has never done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's followed his own conscience. And for that, of course, you really have to applaud him.
And it's in that...
And you may like it or not, you understand.
Right.
It doesn't mean that everything he did is just so gorgeous, you know.
No, it's not. He made some really terrible stuff, for sure.
Right.
And in that sense, that's how he has been... That's what he got out of Guthrie that he was able to keep.
Right. Always true to himself. And being true to himself was a man with a conscience. It wasn't true to himself, you know, it becomes some kind of despicable pro-war, pro-this, you know.
Right, sure.
Nothing like that. So what shall we hear next, Eli? What would you like? You take the next song.
All right. All right, Henrietta. Let's hear Only a Pawn in Their Game.
Suppose you tell us what it's about.
I think in Only a Pawn in Their Game, Dylan turns kind of a classic Guthrie trick. He takes an isolated incident and extrapolates it and shows how the guy that killed Medgar Evers was really manipulated, you know, and it was part of a system. You know, he says in the song, "A Southern politician preaches to the poor white man, 'You got more than the blacks, don't complain. You're better than them. You're born with white skin,' they explain. And the Negro's name is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain as he rises to fame. And the poor white remains on the caboose of the train, but it ain't him to blame. He's only a pawn in their game."
Yes.
And that's really what makes it a great song. I mean, just hearing about some isolated incident is not particularly enlightening, and yet... When you draw a larger conclusions, it becomes a really, you know, really awesome song.
Yeah.
Only a pawn in their game, aren't we all?
A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name. A handle hit out in the dark. A hand set the spark. Two eyes took the aim behind a man's brain. But he can't be blamed. He's only a pawn in their game. The South politician preaches to the poor white man. You got more than the blacks, don't complain. You're better than them, you've been born with white skin, they explain. And the Negro's name is used, it is plain, for the politician's gain. As he rises to fame, and the poor white remains on the caboose of the train. But it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. The deputy sheriffs, the soldiers, the governors get paid. And the marshals and cops get the same. But the poor white man's used in the hands of them all like a tool. He's taught in his school from the start by the rule that the laws are with him to protect his white skin, to keep up his hate, so he never thinks straight about the shape that he's in. But it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. From the poverty shacks, he looks from the cracks to the tracks. And the hoofbeats pound in his brain. And he's taught how to walk in a pack, shoot in the back with his fist in a clinch. To hang and to lynch, to hide neath the hood, to kill with no pain, like a dog on a chain. He ain't got no name, but it ain't him to blame, he's only a pawn in their game. Today Medgar Evers was buried from the bullet he caught. They're lowering him down as a king. But when the shadowy sun sets on the one that fired the gun, you'll see by his grave, on the stone that remains, carved next to his name, his epitaph plain, only a pawn in their game.
Eli, the next songs I think we're going to hear are The Times They Are A-Changing. This is another one of those really terrific songs. And as a matter of fact, it's really apt for our time right now.
That's true.
You know, anywhere that you look in this poem, I mean, you find a reference to today. Like, for instance, come senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway. Don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside, and it is raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing.
I wish the battle was raging a little harder. But it's true, the times are changing drastically in more ways than probably we can even see right now.
Yeah. Well, the point is, change for many people is a painful thing.
Yeah.
The idea that the ideas that you were brought up with,
yeah,
that you were
that's really
born
true.
With,
yeah.
are now going to change or are changing before your eyes, and there's nothing you can do to stop them.
And so this song is kind of an affirmation of that.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, I'd never thought about that or put it in those terms. I think that's really helpful in that sense.
Yes. So in other words, he's not only talking about politics, he's talking about people's personal lives, and the principles by which they have lived for a long, long time. Anyway, this is one song that reminds you that whether you like it or not, the chimes are a-changing.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. Some writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming, 'cause the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are a-changing. Some senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand. For the times, they are a-changing. It is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are a-changing.
Well, I guess that about does it for the political songs. What do we got next?
Well, suppose that we just go to another subject.
Well, you know, after all, Henrietta, what is politics without drugs?
Well, one of my favorites, by the way, of all of the Dylan songs, you know, of that particular period, is Tambourine Man. It's a particularly wonderful little song, and of course it's about drugs. Well, there was lots going on at that time. I remember there was never a party anywhere that didn't have drugs. I mean, kids were fanning out, you know, to festivals, folk music festivals all over the country, and drugs was like, well, I mean, without drugs, how can I have a party? And as we mentioned before, it was, I really think, a terrific reaction to the 1950s and the conformity at that time.
Well, it was just different drugs, you know, instead of alcohol and speed.
That's right.
It became, you know, pot and LSD and stuff.
Well, and, you know, and people during that time, a lot of young people, particularly those people who had a little bit of money and could scare up the fare, were traveling to Oaxaca in Mexico for drugs.
And Tangier.
And Tangier, and to the Far East, where there was plenty, you know, Afghanistan was a very important part.
for heroin
but,
and stuff.
Do you know, yeah. I know something about the drugs, you know, in Latin America, particularly Mexico. I remember once being in the Isthmus of Tehuantepec, which is one of the southern states in Mexico, and a merchant that I met there, a traveling merchant, you know, who traveled from village to village to village in that particular state, told me, he said, Senora, he said, you have no idea how many different kind of drugs there are in this state alone. He mentioned 25 different. You snorted them. You ate them. I mean, you breathed them in. I mean, there were all kinds of ways. And you know, entire towns would come out, go on a binge for 3 days, and that would be the end of it.
These are like indigenous drugs that people were doing down there?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And for all kinds of religious and semi-religious, you know, reasons. And that's all. The festival would come. This is what you eat, peyote.
Yeah, pray that you don't go insane.
Yeah, which is mescaline, you know. And so, and then nobody touches it until the next year. Well, what happened here with us is that the drugs became a daily thing. Where they were symbolic, you know, for some social, particularly religious reason. Well, as a matter of fact, I still remember one story that one of my closest friends in Mexico, who had a little house outside of Mexico City, right near the state capital of Mexico, which is the city of Toluca, but nearby is a little village. He said every year that he was there, he would watch this happen. On a certain date, all of a young man, all dressed up in perfectly beautiful tailored suits and ties and white shirts, would come to the town. For 3 days, they would go on a binge, taking this drug. And then he said, when the 3 days was over, they would just simply put on their suits again and go back with their dispatch cases in hand, go back to Toluca and just live an ordinary life.
Right? Wow.
All right, so here it is, Bob Dylan's Tambourine Man.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Though I know that evening's empire has returned into sand, vanished from my hand, left me blindly here to stand, but still not sleeping. My weariness amazes me, I am branded on my feet. I have no one to meet, and the ancient empty streets too dead for dreaming. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Take me on a trip upon your magic swirling ship. My senses have been stripped. My hands can't feel to grip. My toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere, I'm ready for to fade into my own parade. Cast your dance and spill my way, I promise to go under it. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In a jingle jangle morning, I come following you. Though you might hear laughing, spinning, swinging madly across the sun, it's not aimed at anyone. It's just escaping on the run. And but for the sky, there are no fences facing. And if you hear vague traces of skipping reels of rhyme to your tambourine in time, it's just a ragged clown behind. I wouldn't pay it any mind. It's just a shadow you're seeing that he's chasing. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come following you. Disappearing through the smoke rings of my mind, down the foggy ruins of time, far past the frozen leaves, the haunted, frightened trees, out to the windy beach, far from the twisted reach of crazy sorrow. Yes, to dance beneath the diamond sky with one hand waving free, silhouetted by the sea, circled by the circus sands, with all memory and fate driven deep beneath the waves. Let me forget about today until tomorrow. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I come following you.
Well, that was our abbreviated tour of the early political songs of Bob Dylan. Certainly we played some of his best known material there, but I hope that we've brought some level of clarity to what he was saying, at least in our view. Yeah.
Yes. I just want a last word. I really do think, as I said at the very beginning, that Bob Dylan is the unofficial poet laureate of the United States. And is recognized, I think, by the rest of the world as being just that.
I definitely feel lucky to be around now while he's still around, you know. I went to see him play a couple times, yeah.
Well, now he has his own radio show.
He does, yeah.
A film is done about his life. And there are more articles and more books about him, I think, than practically anybody else I know.
Yeah, I think he's the most written about musician in American history, probably. Yeah. He really threw those critics for a loop. As they say, they didn't know whether to shit or go blind.
That's true. Yeah. That's really true. At least you can't put them in either one little, you know, corner or one little place here. He really defies categorization, right? So long live Bob Dylan.
Hear, hear. You've been listening to Down Home Radio at downhomeradioshow.com. Be sure to check our website often for new information and great pictures and additional materials.
Down Home Radio Show is co-sponsored by PAMAR, Pan American Musical Arts Research, and City Lore.
And be sure to check their websites at pamar.org and citylore.org. Thank you for listening.